Welcome to the Larry Kreider's Leadership Podcast. Larry is the author of over 40 books, the founder of Dove International, a worldwide family of churches and ministries in six continents, and has over 50 years of leadership experience. He and his guest will share inspirational leadership insights from their journey with God. These insights, gleaned from serving leaders in many nations, will transform your life and leadership. For more information on Larry's books and resources, visit LarryKreider.com.
Welcome to the Larry Kreider Leadership Podcast. Larry Kreider here with my wife, Laverne, my favorite co-host. So glad you're here. And with Merle and Cherie Shank, who are going to be the new International Directors of Dove International. Welcome.
Thank you, Larry. It's so good to be here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, here's the deal for, I know there's people all over the world listening to this podcast, and you don't know necessarily who we are. And let me just give a brief minute of explanation. Laverne and I, for the last 43-plus years, have led what's an amazing group of people called Dove International, Dove International Family. And it's a family of churches in nations, in 25 nations of the world, missionaries in other nations. And we've been really, really blessed with that whole process. I got letters from day one, you know, over 1,100 churches in 25 nations. It's just been a God thing. But we realized that the time's coming to release the next generation. We need to get out of the way, train the next generation, who could be like Elijah and Elisha. Elisha had a double portion. And we've gone through a process over the last 6, 7, 8 years. And next year, in April, that'd be April 2024, Merle Shank will take my place as the international director. And Merle and Cherie work close together as a team. Laverne and I, we've worked together for all these years. And they've learned a lot about leadership over the years. And we're just going to pick their brain and ask them a bunch of questions about leadership. So, are you ready?
Yes.
All right. We're here at the Sandy Cove Conference Center. We have, I just, you know, we've never done this before. There's a live audience. So, I don't know if this audience will be quiet. Let's hear. Woo! All right. They're here. They're all here. They're all in. And so we just had an amazing conference. We're about two-thirds of the way through the conference. And tonight we're just going to have this talk with Merle and Cherie about leadership. So, Merle and Cherie, are you ready?
Yes, we are ready.
All right.
You're ready. But Larry, I really feel like we should be asking you these questions. but we'll do our job today. But maybe next time we'll switch it around.
Well, since you said that, I'm going to tell you the story behind the story. We're sitting here in this podcast because of Cherie Shank. They've learned that they keep us at their house really late because we're getting older, that we'll say yes to anything. And a few years ago, Cherie said, "You've got to start a podcast." I said, "I can't do that." And she said, "Yes, you can. We'll help you. I'll help you do it." And it's been amazing, Cherie. Thank you so much. It's been a great blessing.
I've got a great story about staying up late because I think we're really good disciples because I remember when
I know
you
it's coming.
Came to Cape Town and kept us up to like 1 a.m. till we said yes to something. I forget what it was. So we learned from the best.
Good. All right. Question number one. Are you ready? Sure. Question number one is, when did you first know you were called to ministry leadership? When did you know that first? Age 2?
I don't think I ever like woke up. I don't remember a day waking up and saying, I feel called to ministry leadership. In fact, I think this is really funny. I was determined not to marry a pastor. And so the moral of the story is never say never to God, because he might have you do the opposite of what you really thought you would do. And the story behind that is one of my best friends growing up was a pastor's daughter, and I thought, her life is just way too much pressure. I don't need that in my life. But God has a way of turning it around. But one of my earliest ministry memories was preaching out of Romans 12 to my stuffed animals.
Stuffed animals,
verse by verse, and I was going and teaching.
How old were you?
I beseech you, therefore, brother, by the mercies of God, that you present your body a living sacrifice. And that's a funny story when you're preaching, like, verse by verse, you know, like, through to the stuffed animals. You know, they're going to hear the gospel. But I do feel like that has been a verse where every season where God, you know, when you love the Lord, he can ask you for anything.
That's true.
Even the things you never thought you'd get into. And because you love him, you'll say yes. Like Merle can ask me to do something, and I'd say yes to him that someone could ask me to do, and I wouldn't. And so I think the thing about my ministry call is more like just the next yes,
yes.
to the calling of God.
Awesome. Merle, how about you?
Yeah, so growing up, I think I always sensed a call to go. Like, I didn't know much about the apostolic at that point in terms of the phrase, but I always felt like I would be going, that there would be this place of pursuing God somehow, someplace, in different areas, probably when I was like, I don't know, that really 10, 11, 12,
wow.
that age. And I used to stand at the bus stop and like practice trying to get prophetic word or words of knowledge about when the bus would come. You know, like, I mean, just very simple, you know, just like, Lord, like I want to tune my ear to your heart. Like, give me something, you know. And I remember doing that early teenage. So if I talk to you about a prophetic word about a big yellow bus, you know where it came from. But that's, you know, as I was preparing for school and just, so that was kind of just a heart of pursuit. I think different people recognized a call to leadership
right.
in my life at a young age. And different people spoke that or prayed that over me. And so it was always just kind of something that was there for me. And
okay.
before I learned about the apostolic, there was always just this sense of going to the nations. I think even when we were dating, you know, I tried to convince her.
I should have listened.
I tried to convince her that, like, we're going to go into hard places. We're going to go into places that God is going to call us. And it might be difficult, but we're going to go. And we're going to see the hand of God move. And
I talked to my mom, and I'm like, he really has, like, deep issues. Like, he's trying to tell me, like, convince me out of dating him with how intense it's going to be. And now I'm like, why did I listen? He was so good, you know.
I was kind of an intense young man at that point.
But I think what was really cool, too, is when you're parenting your kids, like, you knew from a young age, like, there were things you didn't participate in
right.
at, like, 9, 10, and 11, because you knew it would matter to hit the mark of where you're called to be. And so I think there's callings over our children, those we walk with, and we have to recognize that God's calling them. There's
right.
no mini Holy Spirit.
Right.
So you know, whether you're ministering to adults or kids, you might be sowing into the next generation mm-hmm. leaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was always that yeah. sense
okay.
there.
Okay.
That, as far as I can remember.
That's good.
Yeah. That sense of
calling. Well, talking about dating, you were childhood sweethearts, weren't
yep.
you?
Or,
yeah.
High school
you know,
sweethearts.
Like, high school. We, you know, Larry and I were too. High school sweethearts. Yeah.
We were, yeah.
So tell us about that.
She was in eighth grade when I thought she
That's
was the top
true.
Of the world. I first saw you. You were in eighth grade.
She was in 10th grade when I first saw her.
Okay.
And me being the romantic, suave individual that I was, asked her this very important question that maybe people from Pennsylvania would really understand. I saw her and I walked up to her and I said, "So, do you hunt?" And when she said yes, I knew she was the one.
Is that really true?
It's really true. It's really true. I didn't know what else to say, and I was just trying to like break the ice, and that was the first thing that came out of my mouth, and it knocked me over when she said yes. I think that was the last time she ever really did.
It really was the last year I've ever hunted, because I was like, it's too cold.
For those of you who don't really get the hunting culture in America, God bless you, but we love it. So.
Where's the inner healing people? He will need it for the bait and switch that I put. That what happened.
Just to translate this for people all over the world,
yes.
hunting is hunting animals, all right? It's not like hunting, you know, hunting for dollar bills in your back, in your porch or something, you know, right?
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Got that right.
Yeah.
All right, so you guys have had a lot of experience in pastoring, more than most people would understand. How long have you been pastoring?
We have been pastoring, we've been in pastoral ministry for 19 years. 17 years of that has been lead pastors.
Okay. So just to give perspective, Laverne and I served in pastor roles in local church for 15 years. And so you guys have 19 years, so you're much, much more prepared than we are. That's it. It's amazing.
It just took us longer to get it. That's it.
Looking back over your time in ministry until now, what was it like in the early days of church planting in South Africa? You spent 11 plus years there. What was that like?
Well, we definitely have had our own journeys, but I loved it. I mean, we were doing street evangelism. We were seeing life groups start. We were young and broke and didn't care. Like, I feel like everybody needs a story of when you didn't have gas in your car or you didn't have food and you're out there in the mission field and you're like, Lord, if you don't provide, like, you need to come through. And I remember the one point when sometimes that really can consume you when you're living by faith and you're just really, you need to see a breakthrough to make it. And I remember God stretching us and stretching us and stretching us and teaching us to depend on Him more than we depend on money. Because if we got to a place where we would lead only by what our checkbook said what was possible, we would never have walked into who we were called to be in Christ. And so He started with like a $5 test and then a $100 test and then a $1,000 test. And we made some mistakes along the way and we had to figure out what's faith and what's presumption. But it was such a fun journey with God. I loved it. It was hard, but it was fun. And we've seen God provide. I'll tell you a story of my great faith. One time, he was going to Kenya. God told him to go to Kenya. And he booked his ticket with airline miles because we didn't have the money. And as we went up to the trip, I think we had like $50 to our name or less. And no like money coming in. Like, we didn't know where it was going to come in from. And he was like, yeah, but the Lord said to go. And so I was like, okay,
the Lord said to go, and if we cancel the ticket, we don't get our miles back.
Yeah, so. And this was just how God was training us in that time. And so I was in Cape Town with I think two kids at the time. And so me being the great woman of faith, I like get a jar of peanut butter and I pray like, Lord, please don't let my husband starve and like sleep on a bench in Kenya. And of course the Kenyans and their hospitality, that did not happen. He was so well hosted. But what God taught us in faith, God provided in unexpected ways on that trip so much that you could meet all your financial needs and bless your host family and pay for all the things. And God really moved and gave some sovereign connections. But over that time, someone came to my house with a half a lamb and they were like making it real spiritual. Like, I don't know, the Lord told me to bring you this half lamb. It's like a pile of meat like this. And he's like giving a whole spiritual reason. And I'm like, thank you, God, for daily bread. That's really what it was. Yeah. And so in our early days, we really had God like stretch us in our faith to not quit. And to trust Him for provision.
Yeah, we were there, our heart was there to plant a church in the very early days. And it was just like, okay, if the gospel works, it'll work in the hardest places. So we had an opportunity to go into a place called Woodstock, which is inner city Cape Town. And at that time, there was 15 gangs that kind of used that area. And they would fight each other. They would all do all kinds of stuff. And a lot of drugs were in that area. And we were just like, well, okay. You know, people we would meet would say, you're going into Woodstock, that's crazy. Like, that's stupid, don't do that. And we were like, well, we were these, somebody talked about earlier in this at our time together here, they talked about like being naive, you know, in faith. And I think it was Rowan. And we were just naive and we were stupid, but we had faith and God rewarded that and He kept us safe. And we planted a house church. We planted a life group, a small group, in a house with four families in a three-bedroom flat apartment. And that's where the church started from. Wow. And we prayed and saw God do really incredible things. Yeah. Tons of stories out of that. And that was kind of like the early days, just raw faith, going for it. We were a part of a Bible school that we took students with us. So we always had like other people with us, younger people with us. And we're always trying to empower other people and lift their lids, but that's,
sure,
yeah.
Sure. That was kind so of what are some things that you learned after being in leadership for several years? You're groaning.
Some of the big things I had to learn, there's this thing where like, if you are a part of a team and you see limitations in your leader, you're like, if we just had a better leader, we could really knock it out of the park. And sometimes as a leader, you can be like, if I just had a better team, like we could really obey God. And then you have this conflict, you know, in this inner conflict. Maybe you would never say it or admit it, but you have this inner conflict. I think I had to learn that the value of individuals, the value of people that God brought, and how to build team, and how the difference between agreement and buy-in. because agreement is different than buy-in.
Explain that.
So yeah, so you can cast vision to people and cast vision to a team, and people will say, yes, we agree with that. That's amazing. We're behind you. And then you go out and do it, and you turn around, and they're way behind you. You know, like, you know, so there's a difference between, yes, we think you should do that, and we're in this with you. This is our vision. We own this. You don't own it by yourself. And so we had to learn, and I had to learn specifically, how to build buy-in and take the time to do that well. We were also very busy pastors at that in that point, and so learning how to not burn out, learning how to not fry. And we got to a point where in our small inner city church, there we had a team of 20 people that was functioning together, running things together. And it was a fun collaborative environment, how to collaborate, how to empower one another. And yeah, Sam and Shireen were there.
Right in this room.
Yeah, right in this room, yeah.
Vouching for you all the way. Yeah. So you say you've learned to be healthy. Can you want to say any more about that? Like, what did you do that, you know, made you more healthy or kept you healthy? Or is that too deep a question?
No. There's no off questions here. I think one of the things that we really had to do was have a vision for what health looked like for us. For us, that was family days. And we had to defend that. Mm-hmm. So we always took time for our kids. So our kids could know when we were present and when we were available to them. You know, because ministry, you're available all the time. You're on call all the time. Right. Everyone, you know, anyone can reach out to you at any time, and you're supposed to be there. And that's good. But we had to learn how to put down healthy boundaries in our life. Mm-hmm. And learn how to say no, or learn how to set the agenda for our time and not let problems set the agenda for our time.
Good.
And I feel like there's more that we can share.
There's so much in that we can share. But I think one of the tools that we learned was there was a situation where Merle had to confront one of the men in the church who was inappropriately text messaging some of the teens.
Okay.
And in the past, I don't know, if you're a pastor who loves confrontation, God bless you. Like, you can, like, pray for all of us at the end. But, like, it's really hard when you're going into, like, a real, like, confrontational thing where you're like, this has to stop. Like, this is not okay. Yeah. But yet you're also seeing this person and their spouse and their children. And in that season, God brought just a really helpful tool called Crucial Conversations. And we knew that we had to read it before we landed back in Cape Town. So we're like reading this material. But to represent the heart of the Father when you go into a situation like that, where you're saying, look, like, because we have an opportunity to address this, this is an expression of the Father's heart for you in this moment to change your heart.
Because restoration is possible.
If they respond well. Right. And how to represent the Father to someone when you're calling them to a higher standard and you're calling them to repentance. And so I think conflict communication was not something particularly that we were always like, yay, we're so excited. But I feel like that tool really helped us grow.
Sure.
We still don't love it, but like we lean into it better from that position, from that excellent
resource. I really had to learn. I shared earlier at another meeting just about how conflict would drain me, and I had to learn how to like not cram it, not just stuff it down and then explode, right? And so that was a really key thing for me, was learning how to do crucial conversations. Mm-hmm. There's another thing we learned, faith. Shri alluded to this, but I remember sitting beside the road with a broken down car, being like, God, why aren't you taking care of us? And in that place, like the Lord ministering to me in my brokenness, and I think Brian actually wrote about it in his book. I was like, Brian, you, what? Anyway, about finances. And God really led us in a journey of learning how to have faith for finances. One thing we always said is that, hey, faith is faith. So whether it's faith for $10 or faith for $1,000 or faith for $100,000, faith is faith.
Yeah.
And so to be faithful in that.
Good.
Yeah.
What were things like when you felt God was sending you back to the USA? You're in USA, you went many places and ended up in South Africa. So what were things like? Talk to us about that journey.
We were so blessed. Like, to be honest, that was probably one of the best seasons of ministry that we had ever had up until that point, where God had brought us on a journey of learning a lot of leadership principles, and it was all starting to hum and click. And I went away and prayed, and the Lord said, I want you to commit 2 more years to Cape Town, and then I'm sending you to the U.S. Mm. And we're from the U.S., so it was like, well, we could just say we're going home, but there was this sense of call that the Lord was saying, no, in the same way that you were sent to South Africa, I'm sending you to the United States. And so those last like 3 years, 2.5 years, we were so blessed. Like, it was fun. It was fun to work together. It was fun what was happening. We were seeing God move on Sunday mornings. We were seeing God move in life groups. We were seeing miracles happen on a regular basis. Like, we didn't even like take cognizance of it. Like, it was just, oh yeah, that's what God does, like in the church and with the ministry teams. And so that was so encouraging for us. And then our team and people that loved us in Cape Town made us feel so honored. And I kept asking Cherie, like, who gets to leave ministry this way, feeling so blessed? Mm-hmm. And who gets to leave the mission field this way? Like, leaving pastoral ministry, because we handed it over to our right-hand couple. Yeah. And then we also left the mission field in that way. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, we kept asking each other, like, who gets to do this? Like, this is amazing how honored we were. And that... Yeah.
And I think the church in Cape Town, I remember them praying for us, and they said, we're not sending you home, but we're sending you into your next season.
Wow.
From Cape Town to where you're called to go. So there was this element of commissioning and like thrusting forth that was really received from us, in the sense that it's hard for them to like say their pastors are going to go to another nation, but they really were intentional about that. Mm.
So you've been through several transitions, and then
we're still in one.
Barry was part of one of our transitions.
Yeah. So yeah, tell us about that and what that made you feel like. And
sure. So actually, to be honest, like how we were blessed in our transition out of ministry in Cape Town and how our transition out of the mission field really kind of set the tone. Because for me, when we came back to the U.S., when we were sent back to the U.S., after building a school for a dear ministry friend, we became associate pastors at Newport Church. And then the pastor there, who was the lead pastor, you know, came to us and said, hey, I want to move on. And I think you need to be the next lead pastor. So having such a blessed experience out of our story made it like, I was like, you know what? Like the same way that we were blessed and that we were so encouraged, I want that for this lead pastor, for Alan Dice. Like I want that for him. Like I want him to experience the best season of ministry he's ever had in the last years that he was working there. And then also for this transition too, to be honest.
We like, feel that. We really feel that from you guys. Yeah.
I mean, that's our heart. I hope that transfers, you know, but that kind of just set the tone for us. Mm. And for me anyway, of just, you know, like, hey, if we can make it the best possible way and the best season for the next the leaders who are moving out. But it has been 9 years of transition.
Wow.
To be honest, since we first got that word in 2014, that I'm sending you to the United States, that kind of clicked things in place for us to become the leaders that were handing things over. And then we were helping a couple other transitions at that point. Then we moved our family halfway across the world, 14 suitcases, and restarted our life in the United States. We're so blessed by partners and churches and people who gave and helped us do that. And but then, you know, we started the Bible school, and then we handed that over, came in and to the local church. We were the leaders that were coming in at that point, you know. So we've been like the transitioning out, the transitioning in, the middle leaders, the whole thing in transition. We just have a lot of experience with transition. That's all right. something that God has used that for is to really make us okay with uncertainty.
Okay.
And standing in faith in the face of uncertainty and learning how to still be a good person in the face of uncertainty. Yeah. Because really there's not a lot that's certain in life, to be honest,
right,
except for his goodness and his love for us. And so
facing
uncertainty, I've been talking a lot. You should say something.
You all good? Anything you want to add, Sheree? You good? Okay, next question. Got a couple more yet. With all you're doing, how do you maintain your marriage relationship? How do you keep your marriage healthy?
Wow, that's the big one.
I'll let you answer that one.
So I love to talk about this because when we were living in Cape Town, you think, oh, you have children, who's going to babysit for you? And I don't know, is there pastors out here, you meet with people and they're like, but we just don't have, you know, a babysitter, or we just don't have...
We can't get to church on time.
Or we don't have, you know, the money. And so I think our dates, when we were in Cape Town, we started dating, tried to date like once a week, was like the 50-cent McDonald's ice cream and the walk on the beach. And there was a half-price movie night. I don't know if the Cape Town guys remember it. It was like R$7 to go to the movie on Tuesday night or something. And that's what we did with intention. We had to be super intentional about it because we wasn't an easy person to get to watch our children, and wasn't always finances. And so I think there's always a way to put in the right practices. Mm-hmm. So just like you got to take care of your car, or you got to take care of your home, you got to maintenance your relationship. Mm-hmm. And that is best if it's done in an intentional way. Yeah, it costs you something. I mean, there's times when I had 5 kids, we'd get in the car, and we'd be like so tired. Okay, we fed all the children, we delegated the babysitter.
What are we going to do?
Like, we just sit there in the car, like, okay. You know, and it's almost like more work to do that to get out than it is, you know, you're like in your head, you're like, is this worth it?
Yeah.
But it is worth it. Because this has to last the pressures of life.
That's right.
And
that's
this has to last through life's ups and life's downs. And if we're not intentional about that, it's not going to make it. So prioritizing the things that are important, there's always going to be urgent things.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always going to have good reasons why you shouldn't do it. But I think just making that a priority. And then, when we do date nights, it's fun. We're not trying to resolve our latest leadership issue with our church or our vision cast or work out our disagreement. Like, we really have rules that, like, I really like hanging out with Merle. Like, he's a lot of fun to be with. He's my favorite person to be with. And I love having that time just to enjoy one another. And then if we need to schedule another time to, like, work out something, we'll do that. And that's fine.
Occasionally, we have scheduled fights.
Yeah, we do that sometimes. It's just because, like, we schedule them. Well, not to fight, but to work it out.
Sometimes.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's a new thought to me.
Well, we know we need to work it out, and we might be on different sides.
Like, I need to talk to you. Now is not the time to do this.
I agree with that.
Tomorrow at 2:00, can we talk about this?
That's
because
good.
This is
very good.
Yeah.
Going to be a heated discussion.
It's going to be, yes.
Well, I mean, and you
lively
just,
and
it doesn't take up your fun time, but it creates intentionality to come into a place of unity where you're like, this is important enough that I'm going to give it my best effort. And not just my leftover effort, because this is the most important relationship I have to steward.
Yeah.
And it's going to last beyond just what I do, you know, for ministry. So.
Right. Yeah.
And beyond the time your kids are growing, too, you know?
Yeah. I think one thing that I had to learn to do was schedule the times that filled us, the times that were refreshing for us. When you get to a point of being really busy, you actually have to schedule your downtimes instead of schedule your work, right? Because work just fills in the cracks. And so we would schedule and then defend our date nights.
Yep.
Schedule and defend and fight for time away. And it's rarely, I mean, occasionally you'll have something that really comes up that, hey, you need to be there, right? But most things are not as big of a crisis, you know, as it appears to be.
Right.
And so
that's very true.
Really defending those times together has been worth it.
Okay. Well, you're currently a pastor at Newport Church. How will you step into the role as the international director while pastoring Newport Church?
We don't know.
That's the honest
answer.
Trying to track that question.
So, no, you don't have
to. He actually has a plan.
Well, I think, number one, there's a great team at Newport Church.
Yeah.
Like we have a great team
is in
at
this
Newport
room.
Church. Holler out, Newport.
No, honestly, we really need to honor them because if they didn't do what they did, we couldn't do what we do. And they put up with a lot because just like we're in transition, it stresses them out sometimes. So we love you guys. You're amazing. Yeah. Thank you. Awesome. You bless the whole in what you do.
And then, yeah, amen. And then there's also a great team on the Dove International side that we're getting to step into. Yeah. So, but part of this is, there is uncertainty in that as well, to be honest.
Sure.
But when we felt like we had a word, and I think Simon Eng talked about this, you know, when you have a word from the Lord, and we have a word about this for this season.
Yeah.
And so we know that it's possible. It might, you know, you might have to, you know, you might pour yourself out, but like we know it's possible because God wouldn't ask something that he knew you couldn't do without him, right?
Right.
So like, I mean, we know that we need him to do this. Like it's, but with him, it's going to be possible. So we have faith for that.
It's good.
And I think I shared it earlier, but just, you know, sometimes what you believe about what's happening to you is almost as important as what happens to you.
Right.
You can take two individuals and stick them through the same scenarios and wind up with two totally different results because what you believe about what you're going through is almost as equally important as what you actually go through. So if you believe you can't do it, if you believe you're stressed out, you know, in your heart, right? If you believe that it's possible, if you believe that, hey, God, you're going to lead us through this and this is going to be amazing. Yeah. It's not just going to be something that limps along. This is going to, like, we're going to be able to find a way that is going to cause both to flourish, because that's the goal, right? Causing the win-win. And so the win-win and win.
Got it. Wins all around.
Yeah.
Okay, now let me ask you this question this way. This is April right now.
Yes.
2023. April 2024. At this point, you'll be the leader of Dove International. You'll be the international director. We'll go through the whole transition process. Will be over. As you think about that and look to the future, what are you looking forward to in leading the Dove International family?
So what I love is I love cultures. I love nations. Yeah. I love the presence of God.
Yeah.
And in the as the Dove International director, I get to be involved in all three of those
That's
things.
True.
And so for me, it's really like a convergence of passions of my life to be with different cultures in different areas, in different regions, being able to connect with what God is doing there and to flow with brothers and sisters around the world. So I honestly, like in the Dove International family, like we're all about relationship. I know many networks talk about that, but it's really true. Like the sense that so many people, even for this leadership conference where we're having this podcast now, like so many people will talk like, man, there's just something unique about the Dove International Leadership Conference. Like all so many people from around the world and the relationships that exist here. And that I truly love that with all my heart. So I'm really looking forward for more of that, to be honest, and to see that grow and continue.
Awesome. You want to add anything to that?
Well, I think one of the things that blesses me the most is when you get to see the treasure that God, the gift that God puts in someone else.
Yeah.
And you see how God has prepared that person to minister, to impart, to lead, to speak in a key moment. I think part of what I love is to sit in a place like this and see all those connections that happen and see God as the provider and see the broader family. And so I think if there's something that makes me excited, it's when I see that thrive. And so when I think about the next season, I'm like, okay, Lord, you're the connector. Like you're the one who builds your church. And to be part of that makes me feel excited.
Good. I've got two more questions for you yet.
Oh, wow.
Podcast is coming to a close. What are some things that you have learned from mistakes you made, or haven't you made any mistakes?
I can go first. I have a big mistake. I'm going to take it before he takes it. Merle and I say that we refer to this one often. We say we've been there, we got the t-shirt, and we're not going back. I think in our early years of leadership, we thought, oh, we have this great big vision and we're just not like seeing it happen fast enough or the way we want. And like there's some tool out there or some fix out there, or some, if we were better leaders or we knew what to do better, or like we thought if we worked at it, performed at it well enough, it would get better.
Right.
And we would even sit with you, Larry. Like I remember we were sitting in a restaurant and we were like, no, Larry, really, like how did Dove International be what it is? And you were like, it was just the Lord. I'm like, no, but Larry, really, like surely you had some wisdom. And I'm like trying to find the secret. And really, when you're striving to see what God has put inside of you come to pass, you're working at it in your own might.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite verses out of that season is like, it's not by might, and it's not by power, and it's by your spirit. And I don't have, for lack of time, to get in the story, but there was just a very big scenario where we had tried to push in our own might to the point of almost like burning ourselves out in ministry leadership. And then God came in and he breathed on it. And it's so humbling because people looked at it and they were like, whoa, this is so cool.
Yeah.
But in yourself, you knew that was not me.
like there was nothing.
That was not my skill. That was not my leadership. Yeah. That was not my capacity. That was God. And it right sizes you. And it right sizes him. And it shifted my whole perspective. And so there's so many scenarios now where I say, God, I'm not getting out ahead of what you're doing.
Okay.
I'm going to get behind what you're doing, and I'm going to let you move it, because it made what we did look like filthy rags. Like it made
it
all
paled.
That self-effort and striving look ridiculous, because when God stepped in, it was so amazing. It brought him glory. Mm. And so when we say we got the T-shirt, we're like, we're not pushing that anymore. We're not going back. And we said the T-shirt, now we don't even want the T-shirt. We're going to just get behind what God's doing and let him fight the battles and let him do it in his timing. So we learned that lesson the hard way. Yeah.
To kind of on the flip side, like there, we do have the responsibility to maximize what God gives to us, but we can't push something out of season or push something. Because
right.
Just what you're sharing. I think for me, you asked about what I've learned from mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm still learning this one because it's something just with my personality and how God has made me. But I think that really watching my internal dialogue about stuff and really not, you know, a lot dealing with the warfare that happens.
Yeah.
And specifically the warfare that happens around key relationships and in key times. So recognizing that, and I used to fail at that a lot. I don't think I'm failing at that as much now, but that's something that's like a constant watch for me, is learning to have God's perspective on a situation and believe his heart about a situation or about a person or about a challenge, and be okay with not knowing the full outcome of that.
Yeah.
I think I'm still walking through some of that stuff.
Sure.
But that's something that I've learned and am learning.
I think we're all
from all the mistakes.
Really.
Yeah.
Last question I have is, what is God teaching you during this season of your lives? What's current? What's going on right now?
Well, I think you just shared that.
Yeah.
That was really current for you.
Yeah. Yeah, intentionally, like, knowing God's, like, an empowering belief system, to be honest. Like looking at, you can know things in your head and actually experience something different in your heart. Right? Yeah. Like,
right.
I know
right.
I'm a child of God, but I don't always feel like a child
right.
of God.
Right.
I know I'm more than a conqueror, but I don't always feel like,
right?
And that's the difference between what you know in your heart and what you know in your head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so working through the heart things, not letting your heart lie to you, and getting into the deep stuff of that is something that I feel like I'm constantly a student of in this season, because there's nothing like transition and uncertainty that can bring up like your your insecurities and the that's all just kind of comes to bear and floats to the top
sure
in
does.
Seasons like that when you have uncertainty and am I not enough? Like all those internal dialogues. I feel like sometimes as leaders, there are life limiting lies that we wind up putting up with. I shared this in another session earlier today, but like to really know what they are, that the enemy tries to come and use to limit God's ability to work through us by some stuff. Amen. And it's more at the heart level than the head level. Yeah. And trying to work through that. And what that does is it disempowers the enemy in our lives and allows us to maximize what God has put us in a season for and in a moment of time to accomplish. And so I think that's where I am right now.
This is so good. Laverne, any other questions?
No, just thanks for sharing your hearts.
Yeah.
You know,
you guys are so vulnerable.
This amazing journey.
Yeah.
Awesome. It's good.
Yeah, well, this happens to be a live audience, so let's thank God for these guys here. Woo! So good. Yeah, so good. So good. And anyway, listen to the podcast and these different nations of the world. Just want you to know that if you check out the show notes, there'll be lots of opportunities, different links you can check out. Newport Church, of course, Dove International, Crucial Conversations, and other things. Melina, our producer, will make sure that's all on there. We're going to do something new. Really, it's an idea you guys had. And that is we're going to give opportunity for anybody all over the world to ask any questions. You called to ask Larry. I'm not sure what we'll call it yet, but ask questions. And in fact, for those in this room, we're going to put up the QR code up on the screen. But all that information will be on the show notes. And here's what we're going to do. Before I interview them, I'll just take one question. And if it's an easy question, I'll take it. If it's a hard question, I'll get Laverne on the show.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
If it's really hard, I'll get the two of you on too. But it's just to ask questions that people have about leadership. Mm. I may not have the answer, but somebody I know will. Mm-hmm. And we always get someone on the show to help answer those questions. So thank you, everyone, for joining us from around the world on the Larry Carter Leadership Podcast, and where we learn these small things. And if we apply the truth to our lives and we learn these things right, it'll make a massive difference in the lives of those whom we serve. God bless you, and look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you for listening to Larry Crider's Leadership Podcast. If you want more information about any of Larry's books, daily devotionals, small group resources, or any other teachings, go to LarryCrider.com.